top advisors in the industry that are there year in and year out, not just one good year, have a plan on how they approach their business. And they also have the grit. They're willing to do what others are not willing to do.
Welcome to the Business of Sales podcast. I'm your host, Morris Sims. Hey, quick question before we get started with this episode. Do you ever feel like you're working harder than you ever have in your entire life? And then when you look at your income and your business, well, they're just not growing the way that you want them to. Are you putting in the same kind of hard work and hours, but the results are just essentially the same? Well, if you answered yes, then by George, this show is for you. All right, well, I can tell you this. I have been there and done that. I learned how to go from about 30 grand a year, if I was lucky to get that in 2 weeks off, to almost 500,000 a year and 5 weeks off plus. We know how to help you grow your business and your income, and it doesn't necessarily come from putting in more hours or working harder. We can help you work more efficiently and effectively to grow your business. And that's what this podcast is all about. We're going to share practical ideas with you to help you grow, and we're going to have guests on the show who are successful in building and growing their own businesses. Every third week or so, I'm going to share some specific practical ideas with you that are going to help you grow your business. So right now, hey, let's get this show on the road, y'all. Here's today's episode. Help me welcome a very good and dear friend of mine to the show today. His name's Fred DiFilippo, and Fred and I have known each other for a number of years, and Fred taught me, well, let's just say it, he taught me everything I ever knew about marketing. So Fred, welcome to the show.
Yeah. Morris, great to be here. Appreciate that honor.
We're glad to have you, my friend. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself and where you are and what you're doing today.
Well, Morris, today, I've launched my own coaching and training business focused on marketing practice management for financial professionals, and sort of fell into this business identifying some of the gaps I saw over the last 20 to 25 years in working in corporate America like you, specifically in life insurance business, annuities, mutual funds, long-term care, and seeing what financial advisors were doing to build their business and what they weren't doing and the opportunities they were missing.
Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, you've been out there in and amongst the business and in and amongst what's going on in the economy and all the things that we've all had to deal with. What do you see happening today? Where are the opportunities? Where are the problems? Tell us what you see going on, Fred.
Well, I think there's been a dramatic change in consumer expectation over the last 5 to 10 years, really clearly crystallized certainly during the days of COVID, but even before COVID, in terms of what they expect of financial advisors, how they choose financial advisors. And you have many people out there both starting the business new today and are not being given that insight or guidance to start their business and therefore dealing with a hurdle. And those that have been around for 20, 25 years and operating the same way and expecting different results, but the way they've been operating is no longer as successful as it was 5 or 10 years ago. And specifically, the expectation is consumers are expected to deal with someone who specializes and who has some experience in dealing with people like them, whatever that means to them. They're not looking for the generic advisor. You can see it in Google searches. I'm looking for a financial advisor who specializes in X. So if you don't demonstrate or communicate a specialty in what you do, you look like thousands of other advisors and you don't surface to the top, certainly not in the digital world when they're searching for people like of a particular specialization.
That makes perfect sense to me because, I mean, it's the way I search Google. Is it the way you search Google?
That's it. People don't consciously think about it that way, but that's exactly what they're doing. They don't search Google for generics. They look to search Google for specifics.
I just this week decided I'm going to have to bite the bullet and buy Apple computer equipment. It just didn't work anymore. I got to go Apple. I didn't search, well, tell me what Apple has to offer. I said, Google, tell me about an iMac with the best and most stuff on it possible. And then I realized I can't afford that. But I was specific with my search. We've learned how to use the search engine. So that makes perfect sense. How does one go about doing that? I guess you start with a marketing plan, right?
Yeah, I think I get asked all the time, both from new advisors getting into the business, and I was working with a bunch of them yesterday, as well as I have many experienced advisors, 30 years plus. And undoubtedly, we always get to the conversation, what makes a great advisor? And to me, just observing, and I've had the luxury over many years to be exposed to these people, and I'm always looking to see what skills do these people have that are transferable to someone else? Not a personality trait, not whether they're good looking or not. That's not it. It's what are transferable good skills that anybody can pick up? And to me, it's really two things. First and foremost, the top advisors in the industry that are there year in and year out, not just one good year, have a plan on how they approach their business. And they also have the grit. They're willing to do what others are not willing to do. And both of those are the critical ingredients. You just can't have the grit of willing to do what others are not doing and not have a plan to go about it, because then you're basically running around with it like a chicken with your head cut off. If you have a plan and you're not willing to put into the plan and execute the plan with the way it's necessary, then you're not going to make it either. These two ingredients, to me, I see each and every day. You know, we know people like this. And sometimes, ironically, these people don't know that this is what they do that makes them successful.
Hey, pardon the interruption. I've got something for you. If you'll go to www.morrissims.com/freeaudio, you can download a prospecting program that has a number of great prospecting and marketing ideas that you can put in place right now. You can use these things today, y'all. Share your email address with us. We'll stay in touch, but I promise you we'll never spam you with a bunch of crap. And you get a free audio on marketing and prospecting. So, morrissims.com/freeaudio. Let me know what you think, okay? Just drop me an email, morris@morrissims.com. All right, now, let's get back to our show. You know, it was back in 1941, 42. Mr. Gray did his speech where he said, you know, the thing is, the successful people are willing to do those things that unsuccessful people are not willing to do. And then he went on to later on, about three pages later in his speech, to say, and they know why they do it. They've got a strong why behind why they're doing all that. And yep. Fred, you're right on target. I couldn't agree more. Makes perfect sense to me. But that's something that you decide to do, that grit, that decision to go out and do what you know you have to do. That's a decision, and then taking action. But the marketing plan, tell us something about that. Most of us don't know how to begin that whole conversation, Fred. Let's face it, we're salespeople and not marketing people necessarily.
Right.
Start with what's the difference, man? What's the difference between prospecting that we've been taught all our lives and marketing?
Yeah, and Morris, I think it's a great point, because I think there are a lot of people in this business, the financial services business, who use marketing and prospecting synonymously. And to me, the way I look at it in a differentiated way for this business is marketing is the process of creating opportunity and creating awareness for someone to come to you. How do you create the awareness and the attraction for someone you haven't even met yet? As they're looking for an advisor or looking to change for an advisor, how do you attract them to you? That's the marketing process. An emphasis on the process. It's not a one-time event. Prospecting is what most advisors do every day and inherently learn, is where they're proactively going after this same group of people in a proactive way. And they're making calls and they're meeting people on the street, whatever their activities are, where they're proactively going after them, versus marketing is the, how do I get them attracted to me? And when I can get both of those working hand in hand with the same strategy, same communication, that's the ideal state. But you have 80%, I would say 80% of advisors that I start to work with are spending 80% of their time on prospecting, 20% of their time on marketing, and not necessarily with strategic intent.
We know back in the good old days, in the early 80s, when I was an agent, we were taught to go out and find somebody, make an appointment, and go out and make a sale. Today, I seem to find that it really requires more than that. It requires several touches before we can begin to build that relationship where they're even willing to talk to me about what they might need, want, or desire.
Exactly. And that was the way. And I think still to this day, many advisors are taught that. The system, the education to develop a new advisor hasn't dramatically caught up to what the expectations of the marketplace are today. I'll go back to 1984. I was sitting in a room of a major marketing conference. Keynote speaker got up, leader in marketing and the marketing world at that time. And one of the quotes he said was, if you're not a brand, you're a commodity. You're not a brand, you're a commodity. Now, in 1984, he said this, and So you're sitting there, how are brands created, both company and individual personal brands? And if you're a financial advisor, how did you build your brand in 1984? Well, you might have advertised in Yellow Pages, church bulletins. If you had a few extra dollars, roadside outdoor advertising, no one's necessarily doing TV, a lot of direct mail. But also brands were built between 9 and 5, mostly 5 days a week, because lots of businesses were closed on Saturdays and Sundays. You fast forward to today, and your brand is being built around you, whether you want it or not, 24/7 with the advent of the internet. Internet didn't exist in 1984 for consumers. So if this guy was given the same speech today, if he said, if you're not a brand, you're a commodity in 1984, what would he think today with all the tools and resources? And we have a lot of advisors who haven't engaged and taken advantage of the digital side of the marketplace. And as a result of that, they allow their brand to get created for them as opposed to proactively taking action around it.
Fred, let's get really practical here. Yep. What do I do to get started? Where do I begin this process? And is it different if I'm brand new or if I've been around for 10 years and it's just time to rethink this and get started again?
Process is exactly the same regardless of tenure and experience. The first thing is, and your most powerful tool today, is the effectiveness of your digital footprint. How do you show up online to a potential consumer as well as to an existing client? And this is about managing the primary real estate here is your LinkedIn profile, your business Facebook profile, if you've gone to that step. To me, those are the two primary tools in a financial advisory space that people are looking at, and also from that are approved by most organizations or advisors from a compliance standpoint for the use. And, you know, agents will ask me today, especially new ones, do I need a website? And I was with two workshops yesterday with about 40 brand new agents, just a year or two in the business. And I tell them, you don't need a website today if your social media is working for you. If you've got a complete and effective LinkedIn, business Facebook, you don't need a website today. And that's years ago, that was your credibility builder. Today, with the advent of social media, it's not a necessary. It's a nice to have, not a need to have.
Interesting. How do I begin? What do I do, Fred? What do we tell these folks?
So, as I said earlier on, it's about specialization here. And even when you're starting out in the business, it's identifying, you know, we've heard the terms, I think, for many years about having a target market, but few people really execute on this. I see a lot of advisors, you know, have been around 25, 30, 35 years, and you sit down with them and you review their book of business. And the way they built their business was they went to friends and family that got started, made some sales, got referrals, and they built a non-homogeneous book of business. The result is they're sitting there with 700 clients, 800 clients, which, you know, they've had a successful career, but really 75 to 80% of their book of business doesn't meet a profile of the type of client they'd like to do business with today. So so fast forward now, as we talk about target markets, is about building a business of specialization, because that's what consumers expect. So the benefits are first, you're satisfying a consumer expectation by communicating, I specialize in retirement planning for educational professionals, you know, faculty, superintendents, teachers, coaches, anybody in the education realm, understanding their retirement system. Would you rather do business if you're an education professional and you're looking for to understand your retirement system, how to maximize your financial plan? Would you rather do some business with someone who specializes in that arena or someone who just does financial planning for everyone?
Well, of course you'd want that specialist. Yeah. Right. I mean, if I'm going to have my hip replaced, I want a hip replacement specialist to work on my hip, right?
Exactly. Same concept here. And that's what consumers have gotten smarter and looking for, people like that. So when you're building your digital footprint, this is what it has to communicate. It has to communicate that you specialize in this, in what is your specialty, retirement planning, college planning, mortgage protection, whatever it might be, succession planning, estate planning, for whom, what's your market, and then give some geography. People can remember that. Threes, they can remember your specialty, they can remember your market, and they can understand what the geographic market you work in, if it's not blatantly clear. So when I explain this, especially to the people who have been around for a number of years, but they're stuck, how do I get to the next level? They immediately step back and say, hey, if I do that, if I put both feet in that specialty, people that are not looking for that, they're not in that target market and not that specialty, are going to walk away from me. I'm going to lose that business. And they couldn't be more wrong. because it's all about how you position this. And when someone asks you what you do for a living, you know, people always get into this conversation. What do you do for a living? And I'd like to say I run my own professional practice and stop.
Yeah.
It's how do I create the conversation, not the commercial?
Exactly. And I want to sure. do something that's going to have them ask that next question. That's not cheesy.
Right. And so you have to build your social profiles, and however many social profiles you have, they have to be consistent. You have to have the same storyline everywhere, because you don't know what's going to, you know, does someone have a LinkedIn bias? They have a business Facebook bias. Where are they going to look first? And you want to have the consistent story, consistent photography. The overall visual and non-visual message needs to be the same. So, and what this creates is that when people are online searching for this, it improves your search engine optimization, and you're going to show up in that search. So if I'm just saying a financial advisor for ABC company, and I have someone looking for, I'm looking for a financial advisor who specializes in dentistry. Well, I'm not going to come up because I have nowhere. I'm not talking about that in my profile anywhere. But specializing in dentistry and dental labs, if that's my special, if that's what my book of business is about, and my social profile talks about this and it's consistent across the board, I have a greater chance of coming up in their search to get to the next level of consideration. And now I don't even know this person searching for someone like me yet. I land up in their search and their search output, and then they're going to look at me and read me and read about me, and then they're going to make a decision either to call me or not call me. But here's an interesting point. What we find in a lot of the research that's out there in the industry, the people, and I'll say the younger group, those that are under 45, 50 years old, they're going online to look for a financial advisor first and foremost. That's their first step in the process. The people that tend to be a little older, 45 to 50, they're asking someone in their network, do you know a financial advisor who specializes in XYZ? But the interesting thing is the responses they get on both sides, they validate against each other. Meaning the younger person goes online, they find that the Morris Sims is a financial advisor who specializes in my area. The next thing they do is they ask their friends and family, do you know this guy Morris Sims? They're looking for validation of what they found online. And conversely, the people that start with do you know a guy out there or a gal out there that does this, and someone gives them Morris Sims's name, the next thing they do is go online and try to validate what they heard. So the importance of your digital footprint is critical regardless of the age of the person you're going after. Used to be, you know, only the young people are using social media. Couldn't be more falsehood than that.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, we used to think that when we hit the street after our training, that we were probably the most knowledgeable people in the world about financial services and especially about life insurance compared to the right. average person I was going to be talking with. In reality today, they've Googled it all before I ever got there.
Right. Right. And you have to be prepared for that.
You do. And you have to be relevant to your audience. And you know, our friend Tom Hegna, Fred, says riches are in the niches. And what you're saying is we've got to know what our niche is, right?
Right. It's all about efficiency. Financial advisors always ask me, what's the most important thing in my business and operating my business? And I say, it's one word, time. Time is your most valued asset. So in order for you to, you know, when you look at the best of the best in the industry, these are people who have really learned how to use their time most effectively and efficiently. And when you're building a target-based business, a target market-based business, you're focusing your attention on a specific market, just not anyone. And because of that, the way you build that business from a marketing and prospecting perspective is very focused. You don't need to learn 35 ways to market, 35 ways to prospect. I can learn 6 ways and do them over and over and over again because they really work within that market. And I get very good at it. And the third benefit is that then I start to become recognized in that target market for what I do. I'm recognized as the retirement planning specialist for the dental community in Denver, Colorado. That's how I'm talked about in the community. That's how I want to be talked about in the community. I don't want to be called a financial advisor. Nothing wrong with that. But that when someone puts me in the financial advisor box, I'm in that box with everyone else that has that title. I want to be recognized as a retirement planning specialist in this example. I use financial advisory to execute that. Real distinction here.
Golly, this makes just perfect sense. And it really does fit with what I'm hearing all across the board. You know, the people that I talk to in my world that I'm consulting with, we talk about target markets, and they seem to have this fear that I'm going to limit myself. And I tell them, look, somebody walks in your door and says, hey, I need $1 million to cover a loan, whether they're in your target market or not, you better just say, great, how tall are you and what's your address, right?
Right. And again, I run into a similar situation like that. And I say to someone came to me and said, I don't know that I can do this because I think I'm leaving money on the table. And I said, I'd like you to consider using this language the next time someone asks you what you do for a living. They're sitting across the table, or you meet them or on a Zoom call, whatever it might be. And you know for a fact, they're not in your target market, but you'd love to have this person as a client. And when they ask you what you do for a living and you tell them you've been running your own financial practice for 10 years, 12 years, 5 years, whatever it is, and then or you're running your own business, and they ask you more about your business, say, well, I work with lots of a variety of types of clients. Open up your conversation. I work with a variety of types of clients. That makes everyone feel inclusive immediately. Then you tell them, but I specialize in the dental community here in Denver, Colorado. So that doesn't mean you can't work with them, but you have to be willing to put a specialty out there, because that's how you want to be known. That's how you're going to build the most effective and efficient business. But you can include people not in your target market by using that language up front. This particular advisor used that the next day. He sent me a text. And his text was this simple: I can't believe it was that easy.
How perfect is that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I got that text in the middle of a Zoom call. I was speaking to about 40 or 50 people. I had no idea what he was talking about. So I called him after the Zoom call and I said, I got your text. What does this mean? He says, I used the language today.
Oh,
good for
great.
You. I'm glad it worked. Yeah. Sometimes we overthink these, I think. And no one's saying the process is easy. Financial advisory is a tough business. But I think as we said at the beginning of this call, you have to move with consumer expectations. You can't operate the same way you were doing 10 years ago, 5 years ago, or even 2 years ago. You have to stay in tune with what the expectations are if you want to build a respectful, sustainable, and growing business.
That makes perfect sense, Fred. Thank you. Now, okay, so we'll get back to the practical side of the world of building a marketing plan. You've taught us that we have to have a target market, and we should have that specialty, which makes sense. And we have to have a consistent digital footprint. Those are specific actionable things that I can do. What's the next thing I need to do? That's step one and two. What's step three?
So first of all of this that we're talking about needs to be put in writing. I have a lot of people say, well, I got my plan in my head. Well, no one's that good. I haven't met anybody that good, because we continue to re-rationalize all of our things and find the wrong reasons for why we did things if it's in our head. All this has to be put down in an electronic document, because that document is to be reviewed each month, each quarter. That's to make tweaks. It's a living document. So I've identified my target market. I've identified how I've brought my positioning together on my digital footprint, which is, influencing my brand. And then I have to start to think about my strategies and tactics to develop an awareness with these individuals and to drive activity. So for example, and I like to think of, in a financial advisor's world, there's a lot that goes, the horizon, the operational horizon is about 30 days, meaning what's happening in the next 30 days that are important, and what can I impact in the next 30 days? And then I call, that's their first horizon. Their second horizon is 30 days later. That's strategic planning for a financial advisor. And they only have two stakeholders. They have clients and prospects. So the question is, if you think about this sort of in a quadrant of four boxes, in the next 30 days with new prospects, what am I going to do to get in front of a new ideal prospect in the next 30 days? What marketing and prospecting activity am I going to be putting into play? And it can't be more than three things. Otherwise, it's not focused. You're never going to get them executed. Stay focused with the maximum of three things that I can get executed in the next 30 days for a new prospect. And then maybe there's some things that I won't get started in the next 30 days, but I can start them 30 days later, putting down another three things. So I have six activities over the next 1 to 3 months that I can get off the ground that are focused on getting in front of that target market from a marketing and then follow up with prospecting activities. And that's what a new advisor is focusing 100% of their time on, because they have no clients. If I am a experienced advisor, even if I have 10, 20, 30 clients, Then I have to look at the two bottom, what I call the bottom boxes, clients in the next 30 days and clients 30 days later. What am I doing to get in front of an existing client to either get a introduction, personal introduction to someone else, or to get to try to think about what other opportunities might there be with that existing client to help them round out their portfolio, tighten up their portfolio, other opportunities with them. So those four boxes are what are driving the activity towards the target market. And the specific strategies and tactics are going to be slightly different for each market, but there are definitely some best practices out there that work in any market.
Tell us a little bit about those specific strategies and tactics, Fred. Let's focus on, to start with new prospects, people that maybe I don't know, I haven't got a relationship with. What can I do outside of maybe the digital footprint to start going to talk to those people and building a relationship?
Well, I think one of the things is when you're new to the business, we talk about you having some kind of what we call an initial network, an initial market. We've talked about this over the years. And I think a lot of people that come into the business don't effectively maximize that initial market. They tend to, they put them into two buckets. One, they put bucket number one are people that I'm not willing to call today until I get good at this. You know, we used to call them that the chicken list, or then saving them to when I get good.
Oh, yeah.
So I put that in one box. And the other box is I am willing to call these people, but am I really willing to do what I'm supposed to do to try to generate interest? And in the old days, it was, you know, call these people, try to get an appointment and see if you can sell them something. That was the old way of doing it. Again, people are much more educated, experienced. They have access to the internet. They know all about what you're doing before you walk in the door. So the question is, can you provide value to them, give before you get, before you asking them for anything? All of my work with new advisors today is thinking about what's of value to the individual that they may not get on their own. And meaning, can you provide them some information about their own industry that they may not be aware of that's valuable? There's lots of online resources, free and some that then the better ones are a fee base, where you can find information. So for example, if an advisor was calling me, a new advisor was calling me, I was in their network, at least someone they knew, I would call you and say, hey, Fred, I joined ABC organization, great opportunity of building my new career. Love to spend 20 minutes with you to talk about what I'm doing. But first and foremost, I have some information about your industry that I think would be valuable. When can we talk about this? Very few people are picking up the phone and providing that kind of information. That's not usually the call you get from a new advisor. So it intrigues me, what kind of information about my industry might this person have? And if you lead with that, and lead with that in the meeting, you're providing some value. I mean, I had one advisor who was using one of these resources, had a prospective client, someone in their network, was in the construction business and brought this information to the table, got very smart on the construction business, talked about some of the trends and issues, and asked them, you know, how's this affecting you? Well, this blew the prospect away, because this is a person who's a financial advisor. How do they know so much about the construction business? And at the end of the call, the prospective client said to him, you know, I get 3 or 4 construction magazines every quarter. If this is the type of information that you can provide me, I don't need to get these subscriptions. Again, created immediate differentiation for anyone else walking in the door trying to seek financial advisory for this client.
And you're absolutely right. You've got to give value before somebody's going to be willing to talk to you and share anything about themselves, which is right. How we're going to begin to build relationships, which is what the whole business is a part of. How about if I'm an experienced agent, I've been in the business about 10 years and I'm kind of plateaued right at a specific level, and it's time now to grow. It's time now to get bigger. It's time now to go to that next quantum leap, that next level of business. Mm-hmm. Where do I begin my marketing efforts?
So here's the beauty of it. So when I'm working, and I have a client who's a 30-year top performing in the industry client, and again, exactly plateaued, would like to get to a personal next level for this person. And how do I do that? Well, we look throughout, and I said we start with your book of business. You know, let's look at your top 25 clients as you would define them. Let's have a conversation. What's the commonality here? Who on that list would you like to replicate 100 times? And we're going to find some commonality. And we did that. There's a specific industry for this particular advisor. And I said, all of your future business here, future is the is that we're going to go after these types of clients. Again, this person wasn't targeting early in their career, but over time just got a lot of people in a particular industry. And I said, you want to get you want to take a strategy here, because the most successful way of getting the next ideal client, and I talk about ideal clients all the time. Ideal clients are the type of people who appreciate third party advice. You have a good working relationship. This is the type of client you'll want to, you know, socialize with, have a beer, have a glass of wine with, maybe. It's not something just business. You're involved in their personal life. These are people like you like to hang out with and you have an authentic passion for. But to find more of these people, the best way is to get a personal introduction from someone who already in your book of business that meets this profile. But, and the key but here, is you have to earn your way into your client's network to get that next personal introduction. And I walk up, there's, you know, it's using the right language and process for people to feel good about the relationship you have before you ask them for that personal introduction. And I keep saying personal introduction versus referral, because that's what you're shooting for. The referral is a second choice, in my opinion.
Oh, in today's world, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. If you know, you can tell me to call Fred DiFilippo, and that's wonderful and great. But on the other hand, if you say, look, I'm going to send Fred an email and I'll copy you on it so that we can kind of introduce you guys electronically, I'm all over that. I think it's great. Right. I think it's the right thing to do.
So from the established provider, they have a book of business that the new advisor doesn't. And to lean into that, because there's some insight there that sometimes the experienced advisor is not looking at, and really taking the time. Let's look at my top 25. Who are the people I'd like to replicate? Let me have a key conversation with them. And I've worked on this conversation with many advisors over the last 15 years, to the point where it's almost down to a science, and it's a process, and you have to earn your way in. What I find is some advisors I'll share this with, and they'll say, yeah, I had that conversation during an annual review. And I said, well, you don't have to go any further. That probably didn't go well, right? And he said, no, it didn't. And I want to know why. I said, because the annual review is all about them, not about you. And you just changed. You just, at the end of that annual review, they felt good. You provided all the guidance. They felt good on all the purchases and investments that they made with you. And then all of a sudden you turned and made the call about you. This conversation that you're going to have for personal introduction is a separate meeting. Separate meeting has nothing to do with them. It's all about guidance that you're asking for them, and you shouldn't combine the two.
So Fred, if we go back to the process here,
yep.
Determine that target market, get specific, have a specialty, then make sure you have a digital footprint that is consistent in those digital platforms that you are involved in, and your clients, more than likely your prospects, are involved in, and then put it all in writing and get to the specific strategies and tactics that you're going to do in the next 30 and or the next 60 days after that for both your brand new clients and your existing clients.
Right.
Fred, that's so easy and so simple, and marketing should be easy, shouldn't it?
Well, I say the principles are a science. The execution is an art, and there's trial and error in this. If someone says to you they have a prescriptive marketing process, just follow my 10 steps and you're going to get a guaranteed results every single time. It's, again, we always say that if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. That's it. The principles we're talking about are solid. It's the execution is a little bit trial and error, because some things work better in some geographies and some markets than others. And it's about learning that process, but willing to put in the time and effort to do that, because it pays off at the end. I mean, one of the top advisors in the industry said to me, you know, when I was having this conversation with her about marketing plans, she said, you know, it took me 10 years to learn a process that you're talking to me about right today. And for the first 10 years, it was like starting my first year over and over again. And she said, and when I started out in the business in the early 80s, my marketing plan was opening the phone book in my city, and everybody else was starting in the A's. And I went to my initial and started there. I thought it had an advantage over everyone else. And she said, I might've had a successful year, but it was starting over and over and again. Once I learned this discipline marketing, what I call a marketing practice management process, it's how do I run my business through the lens of marketing? The light bulb, I wasn't recreating anything. I built a foundation in which every year I was tweaking. And now we see this woman as one of the leaders in our industry consistently every year. And it's not just because of the plan, but the plan helped her to execute and do what others are not willing to do in a much easier format.
You know, Dwight Eisenhower said it, and I've used this quote over and over again over the last 6 months or so since I first learned it, but he said, plans are useless, but the process of planning is essential. And I just thought that was just absolutely right on. Fred, the other thing people need sometimes is a mentor or a coach or a consultant to help them get there. How do we get in touch with you if somebody wants to hear more about this from you and get your specific recommendations on their business?
Well, I guess two ways, Morris. They can certainly contact me through LinkedIn and Fred DeFilippo on LinkedIn. Easy to find me there. Or ftdefilippo@gmail.com. Best way to reach me.
Super. And spell DeFilippo for everybody.
DeFilippo.
Two P's, one F. Got it.
Exactly.
Fred, thank you so much. It's really been great to have you on the show today. And it's so good to catch up with you after a period of time where we haven't had a chance to talk. Thank you very much. Best wishes to you. And for everybody else out there, y'all go out there and have some fun this week. Make it a great week and enjoy what you do, because what you do changes lives and makes a difference to everybody you see. And until next time, I'm Morris Sims.